Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Rap Caviar, the popular Spotify playlist, became a documentary series on Hulu yesterday. What can you expect from Rap Caviar Presents? Get a response from executive producer and showrunner Steve Revo when he joins me next. A popular Disney Channel Toon series opened its second season tomorrow, and we're not April Foolin'. What's more, The Ghost and Molly McGee introduces a groundbreaking character. We'll connect next half hour with creators and executive producers Bill Mott and Bob Ross. Also ahead, GLAAD's 2023 TV awardees, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. I present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this last day of March 2023 for the program about TV's current and future, a little later than usual. I'll explain that in a moment. Happy to have you aboard. 49 degrees, top of the hour, some great guests coming away in the 60 minutes ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. How do you do it? You pick up the phone and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. For some reason, our chat room is not operating at the moment. We will try to get it off the ground as soon as we can. So right now, use the phone to interact with us. And as you all know, or some of you know if you're just joining us, I want to let you know that you can connect with others anytime you like by using Facebook Timeline. You can find the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Before we get full throttle in today's episode, I want to explain why we are coming at you an hour later than our usual time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Originally, our first hour was going to feature a pair of entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, who in recent months have launched new television networks. First, Marcy Hamilton. She's the chief executive officer of her own company, Tricoast Worldwide, and they have two television networks distributed through smart TV sets and smart devices. One is called Made It Myself Television, out to be the new DIY service, do-it-yourself service, and the other is called Dark Matter Television, a genre service featuring movies and television. Our second entrepreneur is Diana Wilson, who last week turned her website and mobile app known as Profile Sport into ProfileSport.tv, dealing with the world of youth and amateur sports, available again on smart TV sets and smart devices. Unfortunately, we learned over the course of the last 48 hours that both of them could not be with us today. Marcy has come down with a very severe case of laryngitis, and Diana had an executive meeting switch from yesterday to today. So that explains why we are on an hour later than our usual start time. I'm very happy to say that both of our guests that were scheduled have been reset. Marcy will join us a week from Monday on April 10th, and Diana will be with us as part of a very big 90-minute edition coming your way on Thursday, Holy Thursday, April 6th. So I hope you'll tune in both situations. And for those of you that were expecting those folks, we're sorry about it. It does happen. Life does happen. And I'm happy to say it again that both Marcy Hamilton and Anna Wilson will be with us over the next 2 weeks on this very program. We will have our guests for this week and this day, starting with Steve Revo, who will join me here in NYC from the new Hulu series Rap Caviar Presents after these news notes. GLAAD made its 2023 TV Award winners public last night during the first of two media award ceremonies. What We Do in the Shadows from FX received the Best Comedy Series honor, and Fox's 9-1-1 Lone Star won for Best Drama Series, and The White Lotus from HBO was honored in the Miniseries Anthology Series category. The new series honoree, A League of Their Own from Prime Video, just renewed for a shortened second and final season there. Another HBO series, Los Spookies, won for Spanish Language Scripted Television. GLAAD staged its first Media Awards event in Los Angeles and will hand out more awards this May here in New York. Now, quickies, Series Fest 2023 is confirmed to happen May 5th to 10th in Denver. Key speakers for the annual TV festival this go-round include Televisa Univision or Univision Chief Executive Wade Davis, Starz Original Plumbing Overseer Catherine Busby, and Tubi Chief Creative Officer Adam Lewinson. We hope to have more details on Series Fest as they are available, and we hope to have the people behind Series Fest as is an annual tradition with us before the end of the month. Tudor England times during the 16th century is the focus of Shard Lake, a 4-episode Disney Plus miniseries now in production overseas. Look for a premiere by summer 2024. And Gold Rush Offshoot Series White Water returns to Discovery Channel's lineup April 14th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me here in New York in an internet radio exclusive, the executive producer and showrunner of the brand-new Hulu docuseries that started yesterday, Rap Caviar Presents, Steve Rebo. Steve, happy to have you with us.
Thanks, Simon. Great to be here.
How did you get involved in this series? I believe this may be the first one where, rather than a podcast being adapted for television, it's a playlist.
Well, that is true. We were so excited to have the opportunity to work with Spotify to turn what really is one of the most influential properties in all of hip hop, the Rap Caviar playlist, into a TV series. I was brought in the late fall of 2021 as showrunner, as part of a team of creative folks that were hired to work with Spotify and IPC, the Intellectual Property Corporation, the production company, an amazing group out in LA. To work for Hulu, who had greenlit the series. So the show had been in development for a couple of years before I got involved. There was a pilot process, and this series was, once it was greenlit, they started assembling a team. And I was lucky enough to get the job. So really, really cool opportunity.
Why do you think Rap Caviar has become the Spotify darling that it is?
Well, I mean, rap is absolutely, hip-hop and rap are the biggest, most popular, most influential genre of music. There's really no question about it. I mean, I think as music fans, people have, you know, interest across the spectrum. There's tremendous album sales and record sales in all areas. But hip-hop is more than just music. I mean, it's an entire culture. And I think it's, a fervent fan base. And also just incredibly influential and incredibly important in the history of both American music and American culture. So it makes sense that Rap Caviar would be the biggest playlist that Spotify has. I think there's 15 or 16 million subscribers to the playlist. That's people who actively subscribe, so more people listen. And it really just has become, especially in the streaming era, as influential or more influential than top radio stations when we were kids. So when we were growing up, if you wanted to be exposed to new music, you obviously turn on the radio and you listened to whatever station that was in your town. But this is not only a national, it's international. So if a song gets onto the Rap Caviar playlist, it has enormous implications for the artist. And it's really just the most important and influential way that artists get broken and artists, who are already famous and popular are able to present new music to their audiences. So Spotify was very clear and very deliberate about the fact that they wanted to expand on what the playlist did, which is essentially just presenting music. They wanted to create context for that music. So they have podcasts that they make. They start to make short videos that were kind of part of the Rap Caviar universe. But Carl Cherry, who is the curator of the playlist and creative director at Spotify, head of urban music, Carl is really the creator of this show, and it was really his vision to expand the reach of the playlist beyond just a playlist, beyond just podcasts, beyond people talking, and into long-form, sort of rigorous premium television storytelling. So that was the challenge that we had, and it was just, incredibly awesome experience for everybody.
We now are at the point where quite a few podcasts have become television series, and in fact, a number of podcast makers are in business to adapt their podcasts for television. When you do something like a playlist and you are trying to visualize it, how did the vision from Carl and you and Karen Gill, who's another key executive producer and creative director, how did your vision evolve from, all right, we've got the go-ahead from Hulu to make this happen, to what we started seeing yesterday?
Well, that's a great question, Simon. I think, really based on the experiences of those of us who were tasked with the challenge, Carl comes from journalism. He was a hip-hop writer and editor, and Carm's been making documentaries for a long time, very focused on hip-hop, and I've been doing documentaries for many years in all different genres. And so what we were really interested in was sort of long-form journalism, really is the best way to describe it. So it's not really celebrity profile. There had been other hip-hop series You know, they're very focused on just profiles. There's biography series. There's great historical stuff. I had actually just come off of working with Nas on a film called, you know, You're Watching Video Music Box, which was a Showtime feature doc about kind of the evolution of hip-hop videos and the visualization of hip-hop music as it began in the 1980s through to today. So, you know, and Hip-Hop 50th Anniversary, Hip-Hop 50 is a project I was also involved with Showtime, where this whole year of 2023, we've all been celebrating and honoring the 50-year anniversary of hip-hop. So lots of historical projects, lots of focus on artists. We felt that what we really wanted to do was focus on the current state of hip-hop and do that through telling stories in the way that you would in long-form journalism. So imagining that each episode would really tell the story the way that you would approach it in a Rolling Stone profile or a New Yorker profile or something that you would read, you know, in New York Times Magazine. I mean, that's kind of the work that I'm interested in doing, that I've been doing for a long time. So it's kind of what people talk about as premium documentary. For us who do it, it's more just kind of like, this is good, this is interesting, this is high quality, this is smart, this is something that I think it will educate people as well as entertain them. So we took that approach from the very beginning and said, okay, each episode is going to tell a story, and it's going to be focused on an artist. And it needs to be an artist who's relevant to the Rap Caviar audience, so it's somebody who is popular today, who's putting out new music, usually pretty young artists. And then expanding beyond that, it's not just going to be a profile or a history of this person. We're going to use their music, their life story, their experiences as a lens to look at an important issue in society and culture. So that's really what we did. And we focused on a few different artists we can talk about and some of the issues that their work suggested.
Rap Caviar Presents premiered yesterday on Hulu. It's a 6-episode docuseries based on the famous Spotify playlist. We've got one of the key people involved in the program, Steve Revo. He is an executive producer and showrunner. He joins me here in NYC this afternoon and this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Abb, I'm with you also from NYC. Happy to have you with us on the program, All About TV's Current and Future, our final episode of the week and of March 2023. If you have a question or a comment for Steve, make that phone call go, 646-652-2906. Unfortunately, our chat room looks like it is not available. We're still going to try to even get up and running before the end of the hour, so stay tuned. And again, if you have an issue with the chat room, get on the phone, and that way we will hear you. We've got another episode, Triple Header, coming your way to welcome April next week. It'll be on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Thursday. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. No Good Friday episode next Friday. And on Thursday, we've got a great 90 minutes in store for you. Our first guest will be Tyler Perry Studios' former head, Michelle Sneed. What's she doing now? She's forming her own studio called A Few Good Women Productions, and we'll talk about how television will play a big role in what she is doing there. Plus, as mentioned earlier, we'll have Diana Wilson, the founder of the new television service based on the popular website and mobile app, ProfileSport.tv. And we'll also have a very popular writer who specialized in doing books about the world of television. His name is Herbie Pilato. His latest book is Retroactive Television, and he's also doing a documentary special on the great and late actress, the star bewitched, Elizabeth Montgomery. That's all coming your way on Thursday, Holy Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Each of these episodes deal with not only a particular hip-hopper, but also an issue that might be associated with that person. For example, in one episode, you've got Tyler, the Creator, and the issue is masculinity. Another one deals with the group, the people known as City Girls, and it deals with money, wealth, sexuality. Another one deals with a hip-hopper named Roddy Ricch, and it deals with public scrutiny and backlash, and so on and so forth. Was it easy to match the artist with the issue, or was it more of a challenge than people thought?
Well, you know, getting there's so many different issues in terms of figuring out who to feature and what kind of a focus that we wanted to have for each episode. That clearly, you know, the people that we ended up including in the series, Tyler, as you mentioned, who's one of the great artists right now. He actually released an album today, which was incredibly fortunate for us. New music as soon as we dropped our series, and he's been super supportive of the series, and we're just such huge fans. But, you know, Tyler's story which really seems to be resonating with folks. Just in the day that the show has been out, you know, there's been so much chatter on Twitter of people talking about how much they love the episode and how much the themes that we're talking about in it really resonate with people, which is exactly what we were hoping for, is that these episodes would attract people because maybe of the fandom or the celebrity or a natural interest in a celebrity rap star, but would also then create conversation. So people are talking about what the issue is. You know, it wasn't necessarily matching up an artist with an issue. It was looking at different artists who we felt would fit the series and trying to figure out, you know, what is the story that would be most relevant for that artist. So Roddy Ricch, who you mentioned, who's a terrific rapper who had a huge hit called The Box that sort of catapulted him very, very quickly. Massive TikTok internet virality that, you know, shot him to the top of the charts, and which is happening. We see it over and over again with artists these days who go viral on TikTok or YouTube. What happens after that? You know, so the question was like, you have sort of a meteoric ascent and then you're at the top. And then what do? What kind of music do you make? What kind of pressures does that put on an artist? What happens when you put out a second single or a second album and it doesn't match up to the success of the first one? And so that's really a part of Roddy's story and what people have seen in him before. And so we were able to just sort of understand that and then would gravitate towards that and say, okay, well, this is going to make a really interesting episode. Another episode that we have on Coyle Ray, who's huge right now. She's got a massive hit, the song Players. Coy has spent an enormous amount of time dealing with just horrific trolling on the internet and Twitter for body image issues. So that was something that she's talked about and obviously seemed like something that would be relevant to an audience. Lots of people are struggling with that, and she was really willing to talk about it and was amazingly open about sharing that, her experiences with that. Polo G, who's the focus of another episode, who's an amazing Chicago rapper, Polo writes a lot about traumas that he experienced as a young man and trying to overcome them and deal with, mental health issues. So, you know, the artists really automatically sort of matched up to these issues. That's why we picked them, and that's why we focused on the stories that we did.
It sounds like if there's a common theme to each of these episodes, no matter what the issue and the artist is, it's struggle to some degree. The struggle to achieve this, the struggle to achieve that, the struggle to avoid being typecast in a particular way.
Well, isn't so much of art about struggle anyway? It's about storytelling. I think that's definitely another big theme for us is storytelling. Obviously, we're telling stories about these artists, but really trying to figure out what are the stories that they have to tell and what are the issues that they're grappling with. I think another important thing that we talked about a lot while we were making the series is about demystifying the aspects of celebrity that surround people like this. Tyler's one of the biggest stars on the planet. He can't walk down the street without people screaming. I mean, I've seen it in L.A., people absolutely go crazy and want to run up and hug him. You know, we all have that experience of kind of feeling like celebrities are just special in lots of ways. It's really important for us to show that these are people, you know, that there are issues that they're grappling with that may be different from what you and I grapple with, but it still affects them the same way as human beings. There's a really kind of touching moment in the episode about Roddy Ricch. We interviewed Post Malone, who has collaborated with Roddy on some music and was really vulnerable and honest in his interview with us. And a couple people have quoted it back to me already just in the short time that the series has been available. Post Malone says, like, you know, when you read Twitter and people are telling you suck or you're the worst or this is the worst music, like, we're human beings. Like, we feel that, you know, it's the same way as if somebody came up to you on the street and just spit in your face and told you that the work that you worked so hard on really sucked and was horrible. Like, why is that okay? Like, what makes it okay in our society that people can be treated that way? And obviously it's something that comes with fame and it comes with money, it comes with exposure, but really it's true. Like what you're saying in terms of their struggle and the vulnerabilities that as artists that they put out for us to consume and to kind of you know, own, they're still just people. So it was really important to us that we figured out ways to kind of show that as much as we could. And we worked really hard. We had amazing directors on every episode. We spent a lot of time with the artists, and, you know, we were pretty pleased with how much the characters and the personalities of the artists came through.
We're speaking with Steve Revo. He is the executive producer and showrunner of Rap Caviar Presents, the brand new 6-part docuseries now available on Hulu through smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. Steve joins me here in New York City this half hour on Smart TV Televised as we wrap up March 2023. Sanab, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. I want to hear from you in our remaining minutes with Steve. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Again, we apologize for not having the chat room open for whatever the deal is. Hopefully we will try to get it fixed by our next episode, Monday, at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. I want to let you know while I've got you that starting on Monday, the program that I appear on, that you can see me on, which is Sports Newswire on Sports Grid Network, is making a time change. Currently, it is running at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, but starting Monday, it will be running at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. So it will be happening late morning on the East Coast and breakfast time on the West Coast. So starting next week, Sports Newswire, the program I'm on, usually on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. How open were not only the subjects, but the other hip-hop artists? Were they in dealing with you and your staff?
It's hard, Simon. I mean, you know, dealing with celebrities, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you do lots of interviewing of different kinds of folks who are at, you know, different levels of celebrity. It's harder today than it's ever been, and I think it's going to keep getting harder. I've been doing this for a long time, and especially in music and especially in hip-hop, the sort of 24-hour news cycle, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, everybody is just constantly on guard all the time. And the more famous and the bigger the artist is, the more money's at stake and the more people they have surrounding them sort of gatekeeping and making sure that, you know, they don't say anything wrong that's going to upset their you know, brand deals or their sponsorships. So it was hard. It's hard. It's always hard, but it was actually harder than I had even expected. And our partners at Hulu, and IPC, the production company, and Spotify, we all, you know, worked day and night to try and get access to the best, biggest artists that we could and bring in other people to talk with them. I think, you know, we did a really admirable job putting together a lineup of people that I think is pretty impressive. That was very much due to, I think, the reach of Hulu, the prestige of Hulu, and also 100% Spotify being as influential as they are in the music business. So it wasn't just us calling as a production company and saying, hey, we're making a doc series on hip-hop. Would you like to be a part of it? It was really Spotify calling and saying, hey, do you want to be a part of Rap Caviar Presents, which is going to be, you know, the first docu-series based on our influential playlist. So we had a leg up, and it was still incredibly difficult to get people to commit and then to open up. But as I was saying before, I think, you know, our teams did an amazing job with the episodes that we did make.
And one of those you made is called Rhyme and Punishment. And it might end up being, don't know yet, we'll see how the feedback goes, probably the most controversial of the bunch, because it deals with the issue of law enforcement, the situation about how they see rap, the issue of violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously is as hot button an issue as there is in this nation. How did everybody approach the subject?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Simon. I mean, that episode was incredibly important to us, that we get it made and that it become a part of the series, especially the first season of the series. It is basically it's different from the other 6 episodes. It's not focused on one particular artist and one. It's really topical and issue-driven, and the issue is a criminalization of rap and the use of lyrics in court, both of which have been massively in the news this year in 2023 with the indictments of Young Thug and Gunna and the YSL record label in Atlanta. You know, that sort of happened while we were making that episode, but it was inevitable that we were going to do everything we could to try and make that an episode, because as we were pitching stories and we had sort of a writer's room of journalists who were helping us, you know, pitch and conceive stories, every single person who we talked to said, look, you got to do something on lyrics in court. You got to do something about, you know, rappers being over-policed. This has been going on since the beginning of hip-hop. And what we realized as we started digging into the story was it's not only been going on since the beginning of hip-hop, it's been going on since the beginning of there being black people in America. I mean, Killer Mike in the episode says, you know, this is as American as apple pie and slavery, the idea that white people, dominant white culture, have been looking at black people and black culture, you know, askew and with suspicion and with surveillance, essentially surveillance. There's a photo in the episode of, you know, a sort of white slave owner on a horse watching a bunch of people, you know, picking cotton in a field. To us, that there's a direct line from that photo to the idea that today, and at least for the last, you know, 25 years, there has been just an incredible amount of scrutiny of successful black musicians. And it goes back not just to hip-hop, the beginning of hip-hop, but it goes back to Billie Holiday and John Coltrane and, you know, artists, jazz artists who had thick FBI files. So we tried to tell that story as much as we could through the lens, particularly of hip-hop, and through the lens of a few handful of artists today. But it's a huge story, and it's deserving of much more than just one episode of the series.
Steve, before we go, while we wait to see whether the series will get a second season, a second group of episodes, what's next for you?
Well, we're spending a lot of time making sure that people watch this. So we're really excited that it launched. I'm working on a couple music feature docs right now that I can't talk about exactly what they are, but I'm excited to be working in music. I've worked in all different aspects of documentary and spent the last 3-4 years just focused on music. I produced a film on Rick James and did a bunch of those hip-hop 50 projects I was talking about before. So it's really been fun to kind of you know, have sort of a safe landing zone inside music documentary filmmaking. So there's a lot of exciting stuff that's coming up. And people seem to really enjoy that kind of television filmmaking, and I love making it, so I'm excited to keep doing it.
The series is Rap Caviar Presents. It is already on Hulu, 6 episodes, but will be available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the series online, here's where you go, Hulu.com, is HULU.com. Rap Caviar Presents, now available on Hulu. Steve Rebo, thank you again for joining us. All the very best to you and everybody involved in the series. Hopefully yesterday started a great run for it, and I'm very curious to see how people react to it. It's hip-hop is a very fascinating world with all sorts of dimensions to it, and you're trying to make it happen. And let's see if this leads to other shows based on Spotify playlists or playlists of other such shows.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and anyways, it's great to have you on. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend.
Okay, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
Steve Rebo, executive producer and showrunner of Rap Caviar Presents, now on Hulu. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about TV's current and future. We usually come your way Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're also available on lots of great podcast destinations like Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio's Podcast Network, Spotify is also an affiliate of ours, and other great services as well. Incidentally, if the favorite podcast service of yours isn't carrying our program, let me know. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Drop them a line. Let them know you'd like to hear the program. Drop me a line. Let me know who to talk to, and we'll make something happen. And in some cases, like Spotify and others, they took the show because other podcasters took it as well. And we do appreciate all of our podcast affiliates. You can also check us out anytime you like, 24/7, on our wonderful website from On Podium, tomorrowwillbetelevised.com. That's tomorrowwilbetelevised.com. Great home screen. You can check out the latest episode. It's right there at the top of the home screen. And if you have a question about television that you'd like to get answered, put it down at the bottom of the screen. I'll get it. If we use your question and answer it on the air, you, of course, get the credit. That's tomorrowwilbetelevised.com from the fine folks at On Podium. Coming up in the next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. But first, we'll meet the creative duo behind the popular Disney Channel series, The Ghost and Molly Magee. Their second season begins tomorrow morning on Disney Channel, also on Disney Plus, and they have a very interesting, groundbreaking development for season 2. Bill Motz, Bob Ross, join us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet. www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, all together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. On BTR tomorrow, check out the Richard Miller Report. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about the NCAA Men and Women's Final Four. Women's Final Four tonight on ESPN2. Final Four Men's tomorrow on either CBS or TBS or TNT. And he'll have that, golf, NBA basketball, NHL hockey, the start of the baseball season, first weekend of baseball this weekend. Congratulations to both the Mets and the Yankees here in New York. They both won their opening games. Aaron Judge had the big home run on his first at-bat. How about that? As Mel Allen, the former broadcaster, legendary broadcaster for the Yankees and other places, used to say. So check out the Richard Miller Report. That's tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, coming away an hour later than norm. Simon Avon with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us as we wrap up March 2023 and get ready for April. No fooling, of course, at this end. If a question or comment for our guests ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And again, I'm sorry that we do not have our chat up and running. Hopefully, we'll back up in time for our next episode Monday afternoon, our first one of April 2023. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the creators and executive producers of the popular Disney Channel tune starting its second season at 8 a.m. Eastern Pacific Time tomorrow morning, Bill Mott and Bob Roth. Bill and Bob from L.A., welcome in.
Hello. Thank you, Simon, for having us.
It is a pleasure. And, Bill, we'll start with you. How did you two – I know you two have been together in the world of animation for quite some time. How did you both come up with the idea of Ghost and Molly McGee?
Well, yeah, Bob and I have been creative partners for, 31 years, Bob? I think that's right, something like that.
31 long years.
yeah, and we came up with the idea, I think, originally the spark of the idea came about 15 years ago. Bob came into the office one day and said he had this wild idea about a family that goes, in that case it was, goes to Ireland, and they go to a castle where they encounter this supernatural entity that puts a curse on the very positive young lady in the family, whose name at the time was Piper McGee, and said very much what you see in the very first episode. You put the curse on her that wherever she goes, whatever she does, you'll be there haunting her. And she says, oh my gosh, really? Like everywhere I go and everything I do, you're going to be there with me? That sounds like a best friend. And she sort of turns the tables on him, and he realizes, oh, I didn't curse her. She just cursed me. And we thought that was such a funny idea. And we pitched it around town, studios at that time, and it just didn't spark with anybody at that point. So we liked the core idea, so we kind of kept that in our back pocket. And what was interesting was after we completed Lego Star Wars, the Freemaker Adventure show, we had an overall development deal with Disney, and we revisited this idea with them, and they liked it. And I have to say, I think the timing was right, because I don't think the show, had we done what we were thinking of initially back then, would have been as strong as it is now. So I'm really happy it's worked out to be this.
We certainly wouldn't have had Dana Snyder or Ashley Birch, those two make the show, so... Yeah. It was kismet. It was right that we got rejected 15 years ago because the time was not right.
Bob, when you had this wild idea sometime back to do this, had you seen The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, either the film or the television series?
That's come up. I swear I saw some of the TV series as a very little child. I grew up in upstate New York, and we got WPIX and all the New York stations coming up to us. I'm sure I saw it on there on a sick day, but I my memories of it are vague at best.
I watched the movie not all that long ago, actually. That's a fun movie.
The movie's absolutely brilliant.
I should check it out.
With Rex Harrison and mm-hmm. me and Gene Tierney, amazing score by Bernard Herrmann. The TV series with Hope Lang and Edwin Mulhare ran two seasons. First was on NBC, second on ABC when NBC canceled it. And by the way, Edwin Mulhare is getting a lot of attention on YouTube lately. We're seeing like all his some of the Ghost of Mrs. Muir episodes, but also some of his other performances elsewhere on episodic television
nice.
The last couple of weeks. I don't know. It's like Edward Mulhare fan club may have invaded YouTube program department and said, okay, let's bring that man up. It's amazing. How has the show evolved over its first year? How has the Ghost character evolved? How has Molly McGee evolved, their relationship? Because it sounds like Molly, rather than look at having this ghost as a curse in her life, was more of, oh, I got a new playmate that can be with me anytime I get into a scrape.
So, you know, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to say, really, it started off as that they were quite opposite, right? And Scratches reluctantly joined the fair. In fact, the show was originally called The Curse and Molly McGee of the, right? The Curse of Molly McGee?
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, it's been a while. and what, you know, it was interesting to us because we pivoted pretty quickly from that dynamic where he is the reluctant person being pulled along by her sort of optimism.
We didn't want to make a show where two people hate each other. Like, we wanted to make a show about two unlikely best friends.
Right.
So we had to move off that antagonism really quickly, and that was by design.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, we realized in development that these two characters are really Bob and I. Bob tends maybe to be a little bit a grumpy ghost, a little bit of, maybe not the most gregarious, I suppose, a little bit. And whereas I tend to toward sort of magical thinking and positivity, and I'm definitely an extrovert, and Bob tends toward being more of an introvert. And
we both live in Burbank, and Bill is the honorary mayor of Burbank. Like, every time we go to watch Bill Knows Somebody Somewhere, it's like, oh, man. Can I just get through my sandwich without having to meet somebody new?
Yeah, this is kind of true. So, what we realized was, you know, Bob and I are better as a duo than we are separately. Our friendship, I'm a better person because of Bob. I hope that he's a better person because of me. And we kind of really wanted to lean more into how they affect each other positively, mutually affect each other for a better positive effect. And so that's why we changed the show to The Ghost of Mine. It's really about that relationship.
And what's been the most interesting reaction from kids or their parents who have seen the series? What do they like the most? What do they get the most about it that surprised you or both of you?
So my favorite reaction, and I've seen a lot of it, is from parents saying, hey, I watched this with my kid, and I actually really enjoyed it myself. And, like, that's always the target for Bill and me. You know, anybody who's a parent has had that moment where their kid comes to them and says, Mom, Dad, sit next to me on the couch and watch a show. I love it. And you start to watch it, and your brain starts to dribble out your ears, and your eyes start to melt, and you're hoping for an earthquake or tornado or tsunami to hit your house so you don't have to finish watching the rest of the show. So we always try to make something in mind that, you know, is going to work for kids, but also work for the adult who finds themselves trapped next to them and makes them say, you know, at the end of that 30 minutes, hey, you know what? I actually enjoyed that. You got another one? Load up another one. I enjoyed that. I want to see more. And we've seen a bunch of parents say that. So, you know, that's sort of like the dream come true for Bill and me, that we hit that target of co-viewing.
We are talking with the dynamic duo who created and executive produced and still do, that's Bill Motz and Bob Roth. The Ghost of Molly McGee starts its second season on April Fool's Day. That's tomorrow, April 1st, 8 a.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Disney Channel, and it will also be playing starting on Sunday on Disney Plus. Both of them join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Smart Be Televised, and happy you're with us wherever you are. Simon, I'm with you live from, as it turns out, New Ever York, where it is now 50 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Can't use our chat room, as I would normally say, use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For some reason, chat room not working today. Maybe just needs a little, you know, whatever, glue, paste, whatever. But we'll get it hopefully back
it's
in time,
haunted
up
today.
And running. Right next. Yes, go ahead.
I was just saying it was haunted today. Your chat room's haunted.
We'll get it back up and running for sure. Sometime after like 1,600 shows, almost 1,600 episodes, it's very interesting that now it goes on the blink. But we'll get it, we will get it back in great shape. By the way, next week we'll be with you Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. No Friday episode because it's a good Friday. I want to give you a heads up on a great Easter weekend. So it'll be next Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we've got a great Thursday show coming your way, 90-minute one at least. We'll tell you who's on that and a little bit later on. And coming up for the top of the hour, before we leave you, classic trivia question of the week. We introduced the question on Monday. We're still looking for our second weekly winner in a row. And you can win a nice prize if you get in and email that answer first. So stay tuned. Get your trivia caps on so that you can participate. And maybe by the our next show Monday, we will have that winner. Bob, this season number two, is going to be very special in a groundbreaking way because you are introducing a unique character, and I believe this may be the first for an animated television series, at least one that is aimed at a family audience. Tell us about that.
So this season, the Chens move in across the street. They are a family that is perfect for the Mickeys in every way, except for the sad, unfortunate fact that they're ghost hunters, which causes all sorts of problems. But I think you're specifically talking about June, the little sister. June
right.
is autistic, and she is just such a joy to watch on screen. She's the the opposite number for Daryl, Molly's little brother, and he's kind of mischievous. And June is mischievous in her own way too. She's into technology and building and tinkering with things. And she's played by Su-Ann Pien, who is autistic herself. And Su-Ann and Eva Reigelhaupt from the Respectability Group really helped us craft the character of June. We wanted to make sure that we were doing this with some sensitivity, and Eva would go through all our scripts and storyboards with really great, noting the moments where we got it right and telling us the moments where it seems like, June might not enjoy a loud noise like this, or she might react this way to this certain stimulus. It was a real pleasure. Once we cast Su-Ann, she brought so much energy to the character. Some of my favorite, we encourage all our actors to ad-lib, and some of my favorite ad-libs come out of Su-Ann's mind. She brings so much quirky energy to her. It was really fun. It's just something that, we want to do with this show, that we want all sorts of people to be able to see themselves on screen. That kind of representation means something to people. It helps them feel seen, helps them feel a part of our society, helps them feel like, they belong here. So it was an important thing for us to do, and we're super proud of how June has come out, and we can't wait for people to start seeing her tomorrow morning because she is such a spark of energy and such a pip, so much fun.
In case those of you may be wondering who Su-Ann is, she was one of a trio of autistic teenagers who were featured in a marvelous dramatic series from Jason Kadams, the person behind Friday Night Lights and Parenthood, called As We See It, which ran on Prime Video last winter and spring. It got sensational reviews. Some critics were put on the 10 best list. Sadly, it did not get a second season, to a big surprise of a lot of people. And I hope maybe at some point Jason decides to bring the show back. It was a marvelous program. And Sue and the other people involved, and again, all the main characters were autistic. There were autistic people on the writing and production team of the program. So it was groundbreaking in so many different ways. How did this, by the way, come about? Did Respectability, who's wonderful representative Lauren Applebaum, no relation to yours truly, has been on our show several times. We hope to have her back mm-hmm. very, very soon because a lot of action has been happening with TV, both on and off camera, with the disabled community. Did they contact you? Did something happen between you or somebody on your writing production team that suggested it? How did that come about?
I think it's an idea that came out of the writer's room. When we started talking about this new family that was going to move in across the street, we're always looking for something that's going to make them unique and individuals, something that, is going to give us something to write toward. And the notion of having a neurodivergent character was, I think it came up very early on. I don't remember exactly who said it. We took that to Disney. They said, that's fantastic. And they put us in touch with Respectability. And, everything just flowed from there.
It's a fantastic organization, and we are going to invite Lauren to come back on our program in the very near future to talk about what's been going on. So a lot of progress has been made, particularly so far this year, in terms of more people who are disabled, whether it's blind, deaf, hard of hearing, autistic, et cetera, being involved both on and off camera. So congratulations on the character, and I'm very interested to see how it's going to be showcased and also how what the response is from your audience. And MJ, how is that dealing with that kind of that particular character? How has that impacted the writer's room in terms of the kind of stories or the kind of animation that they come up with?
Well, I think especially for the animation itself, but the storyboarding process, we made sure we had it reviewed with respectability to make sure that how her physicality is being consistent with someone who is autistic. And, you know, how June might use her eyes or gesture or something that reacts to, as Bob mentioned, a loud sound. To make sure that we're sort of authentic that way, because, you know, animation, it goes through the hands of a lot of people. And so having someone who sort of could kind of guide us through and making sure that we were doing it well was important to us. And then, you know, the other part, too, that's just such a delight. Sue Ann is hilarious. And I think that also allowed us to see just, like, how far we could push her character, where we could get comedy, you know, just adding into her quirkiness that's so delightful, that she just comes alive. And I think, we released a little clip of her just this past week, and the fan reaction has been just off the charts. It's you know, phenomenal to watch people just say, hey, I'm autistic, I feel so seen. She responds like I do, and you know, that makes me very, very happy. So she will be throughout the whole season, and I'm excited for fans to get to know June and appreciate all that the team, Sue Ann, and respectability especially, has brought to her.
If you want more details about this organization, it's a wonderful organization. They come out with a weekly email newsletter. They have job banks, all sorts of other things. Go to respectability.org, and I invite you to get on that email list, because their weekly email is a revelation of great developments going on and a lot of opportunities that are opening up for people in the disabled community, again, both on and off camera. Bob, we had recently the People in Your Shoes behind another recent Disney Channel series, Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. And one thing they talked about was they really want to make an effort, because it's set in the Lower East Side of New York City, to really have the backgrounds reflect neighborhood. They did a lot of research. If you see episodes, you'll notice, like, the buildings are a certain way, the insides of the buildings, the stores are a certain way. How much research did you do in terms of your backgrounds and then in terms of where you set the program?
So we set the program in a fictional town called Brighton, and we've never specified which state it's in, but it's definitely in the Midwest. And Bill actually did a ton of – because Bill is from the Midwest, a small town in the Midwest. Bill, go. Take the ball. Run.
Yeah, as I say, it's somewhat based on my hometown of Rock Island, Illinois. It's also influenced largely by Cedar Falls, Iowa, and a few other places. So, you know, I went – back to the Midwest and just took, I don't know, literally hundreds of photographs of buildings, you know, interior and exterior, and structures and bridges and streets, and then we sort of put it up in a giant sort of Dropbox thing for all the artists to sort of draw from. And there's, you know, some locations I can point to and say, that is literally this place, or that is literally that place. So, for example, the band shell,
for instance.
Yeah, is in Overman Park in Cedar Falls, Iowa. It's pretty much a one-to-one exact representation. I think you know, part of the architecture of a place is part of the spirit of the place. I think that's one of the things that Moon Girl did so well. And Steve Loader is executive producer of that show and of our show, too. He is one of Bob and I and Steve are the three EPs. So that sensibility of just bringing an authentic sense of was really important to us. And I think it feels like a legit Midwest town.
Bill Motz and Bob Ross, the creative executive producers of the popular Disney Channel tune The Ghost and Molly Magee, going into its second season tomorrow on Disney Channel, 8 a.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and then the next day on Disney Plus. They're our guests this final half hour of today's edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, our final one of March 2023. They're in Los Angeles. Simon Albaum with you along for the ride from New Web, New York. 50 degrees near the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with our guests, make the call, 646-652-2906. Bill and Bob, you have been together for quite some time at Disney, as animators at Disney. You've done a number of Disney shows like Darkwing Duck. A lot of people still remember that wonderful series. What do you think has been, for both of you, the biggest change, the biggest development that's impacted the animation scene?
Ooh, that's a good question. That first, Bob, and then I'll jump in?
Sure.
In TV animation, by the way, so go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. The first thing I'll say is, you know, the kinds of topics we can address has grown exponentially than from when Bill and I got into the business. You know, going right back to the character of June, there was a time where I think there would have been some skittishness addressing a character like that, and that has evaporated, and I think that's for the good of all.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'll say is technology has allowed us to have so much more creative freedom. You know, you mentioned Darkwing Duck. That was the very first show we started on. And when stuff would come back, when you'd look at your raw footage on Darkwing, pretty much what you had to do was, you know, you had to cut out about 10, 15 seconds, and then it was done. You know, then your footage was what it was, and there wasn't really much chance to repair. Unless something was egregiously wrong, there wasn't much chance to finesse it.
You could call retakes, and then they would have to sort of readjust it and send you the film back later.
Right.
But, yeah,
and
not
now,
much flexibility.
Now with a digital pipeline, we can do so many changes right up to the last second. We have so much more creative freedom and control over the final product that we can really start to do some spectacular stuff. And I think you see it in our show. You see it on Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. You see it on almost any show today. Like, you know, the notion of TV animation being the little kid brother to feature animation, that gap is narrowing quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it, one of the things I think is amazing is we just had this conversation the other day of, hey, can we do this? You know, this would be a fun thing to add. Can we just change the animation here? Can we just do this? And we have a wonderful technical directors who work on our show, and they're like, yeah, we can get in there, and we can manipulate it this way and do that and add this thing to it. And it's that's a luxury we have not been able to have for most of our career. That's a relatively recent addition.
Exactly.
A few weeks ago, ESPN carried a National Hockey League regular season game between the New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals that was carried live in animated form using the characters and the backgrounds of Big City Greens, one of Disney Channel's most popular mm-hmm. animated series, live on Disney Channel.
Yeah.
It was on Disney XD. It was also carried on, I think, ESPN Plus and Disney Plus. And the animation, again, was live, and it was really amazing to see how they did this, where you could have the play-by-play live, but also the animation, the backgrounds, all sorts of different angles, call-ins from various Big City Green characters. Is live animation the future of the medium?
I think you're going to start to see more of that. That hockey game, I think, was the tip of the iceberg, and we're going to start to see more and more. Although I think there's also going to be a place for I don't know if that'll ever replace the kind of stuff we do, where it's written, it's planned, but you're going to see more and more of that spontaneous kind of spontaneous is the wrong word because a heck of a lot of work went into that, I'm sure. But you're going to start to see some more of that kind of stuff because again, the technology is growing by leaps and bounds. So the more that is within the reach of everybody, the more you're going to see it, of course. Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things that we'll be able to take advantage of that technology is just more improvisation and, you know, the sort of South Park model of being able to do things so, so quickly that they're still very topical, like ripped from the news this week. So I think there's going to be some really exciting opportunities and that kind of thing. And technologically, what they accomplished with that hockey animation was just breathtaking to me. And I think that's just the tip of the iceberg of what will be coming.
You can catch the second season premiere of The Ghost and Molly Magee tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on the Disney Channel, and then the following day on Disney Plus, available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the series online, go to www.disneychannel.com or www.disneynow.com. That's disneychannel.com or disneynow, one phrase, .com. The Ghost and Molly Magee, second season begins tomorrow, April Fool's Day, 8 a.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. No fooling. Bill Mott, Bob Roth, thank you both very, very much for coming on. Congratulations on the second season. Hopefully many, many more to come. It's been a treasure and a treat to have you both on, and wish you all the greatest.
Well, thank
you,
much,
so much, Simon.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Delight to be here.
Happy to hear. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Bill Mott and Bob Roth joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. We're going for our second weekly win in a row. It can be you, and if so, if you're first emailing the correct answer, you will win a pair of NBC Universal Notepads. Great looking, and you can use them for any kind of thing you want. Here's the question. Name the 1994 U.S. Network series adapted from novels by William Shatner. Name the 1994 U.S. Network series adapted from novels by William Shatner. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. Correct answer, you win. If you don't get a winner by the end today, post a question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. Thanks to our guests for being with us this past hour, all of you for tuning in, and thanks to all of our guests who made this March 2023 so special. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast anytime during this weekend at all of our podcast destinations, as well as our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. Our next episode, first of three to kick off April, on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, also will be on Wednesday and Thursday, where our guests will be Michelle Sneed, former Tyler Perry Productions and Studios head, now a Foo Good Woman Productions founder. Also, from ProfileSport.tv, the founder, Diana Wilson, and Retroactive T author, Herbie J. Pilato. Love to hear from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Also, find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We respond to what you have to say within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants, now to those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website service by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of March. Great start to April. Have a wonderful time rooting for your favorite teams in the NCAA Women's Final Four tonight and the Men's Final Four tomorrow. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, speaker tune and radio, or our podcast station on our website at our regular time. Again, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Whatever you're doing between now and then, of course, make it safe and make it great. No April fooling. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.